All right, good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll go ahead and get started. We are fortunate to have with us Bob Ehart this afternoon, who is a food safety expert with the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. American Farm Bureau works very closely with NASDA on their efforts in not only commenting and going through the rulemaking process of the Food Safety Modernization Act, but also now in the very critical stages that the industry is in the implementation and in the education part. And that's something that Farm Bureau is working very hard on, making sure our farmers have all the tools that they need. One element of that that we have focused on is trying to get the State Departments of Ag and the local experts right in the thick of this, right in on the farms, doing different inspections that may or may not be required, and doing a lot of this training. And in that role, NASDA has been integral. So I will turn it over to Bob, and let's give him a warm Farm Bureau welcome.
Thank you very much, Christy. It's a pleasure to be here. To help me out a little bit, I want to get a sense of where folks are from. So can you holler out your states? Okay. North Carolina, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Hawaii, yay. Okay. Where else? All right. Wonderful. Kansas, Florida. All right. We have a really good mix. That's really good. I'm going to have a map a little bit later. Where was that?
Alabama.
All right. The top of the list. I have a map later on that actually will give you some information about what states are most actively involved in. I thought that would actually be a little bit helpful. Also, to figure out who all might also be in the room. Is anybody from any of the federal agencies here? You might know why I'm asking that. And which one are you with?
I'm with the USDA Economic
Research Service. All right. Well, there's no question in any of our minds that we all want safe food. We expect it, in fact, to be safe. It's a part of the way that we just look at what when we go shopping or we go out to eat, that we expect it is always going to be safe for us. We had one of our members in one of his stump speeches, major stump speech, used to pause right about in the middle of actually talking about some issues, and he'd say, "Do you realize that 4 out of 4 people eat?" And the point, and the reason I am repeating it, is the fact that what FSMA is expected to do, what the Food Safety Modernization Act is expected to do, is a balancing act that a lot of laws don't have as big of a responsibility. We have to get this right because we do eat. The consequence of overregulation is that we're going to mess with the availability of food. If we underregulate or at least don't understand the value of the food safety practices that we know actually work, then we're not going to have safe food. Neither of those outcomes are very acceptable for us, and so it's an interesting area that we really have to make sure that we focus on. Some of the things I'm not going to do today, I've got way too many slides, so some of them I'm going to click past fairly significantly, but I just want you to get an idea of some of the bigger picture or things that are related in it. This is not a training course on FSMA. The Produce Safety Alliance, headquartered out of Cornell and hooked into almost all of the state extension services, is doing that, and you've got ample opportunity with the experts from your own states to be able to see those or be involved in those. You all know what NASDA is? You know, NASDA members are the secretary directors and commissioners of the state departments of agriculture. So all 50 states belong. Four of the territories also are our members. We have 12 of our members are elected. The rest are appointed by the governor. We have a mission of growing and enhancing agriculture and forging partnerships to create consensus. Some days that sounds really good. Other days it's not particularly easy to accomplish. We have a breakout of 4 regional areas. We meet mostly as a national organization, but there are some regional differences that makes that actually have some value to us as well. We are in an interesting place with food safety. 1997, then President Clinton published or organized an initiative on food safety. This is what year now? Let's see, 2017. That's two decades, and we still haven't implemented FSMA. So there is so much going on that is related to food safety, some of it being accepted as standard ways of doing things, some that are a little bit differently done. But we're so far, in my own estimation, we're so far behind in providing to those of you that are going to have to be regulated by this. We've been messing around way too long. You guys have been, I think, more patient than what most people need to be, frankly, in getting to this point. So we have some important things that have happened, though. Part of the reason that it took the time is, frankly, there's been some fights going on about what's the balance policy. One of the things that tipped things into the scale of saying that this is a way to do things was when Congress decided that whatever was good for the goose was good for the gander. So if it has to be done by domestic producers, it must be done by foreign producers as well. How we're going to get to that, we'll talk a little bit later. But it's something that it really started to focus on problems. One of our members has said that the status quo from back before, the 1997, one of the things that was going on at that time is if an incident occurred, one or more farmers were going being put out of business. That's not sustainable. That's not the way that we want this to work. So the idea of switching the view to prevention instead of reaction, the way the law gave authority to FDA before, was that they went to they would react to an outbreak and then do something about it. The obligation to go to prevention means a whole different mindset of the way that we approach this. Prevention says education is equally important to enforcement. It's going to be a hard road for FDA to follow. They're an enforcement agency in their own mind. So they find it difficult to look at it and say, we're going to help you to make sure that you don't even have to have somebody come on your farm for the purposes of looking at your farm from a foodborne illness point of view. Now, I want to talk a little bit this afternoon about some things that are disconnects for me. I'm only really going to focus on the produce safety rule, but there are seven rules, and we'll list them for you, but there are seven rules that are the major rules implementing the Food Safety Modernization Act. We refer to the produce safety rule in that shorthand, but its actual name is the Standards for Growing, Harvesting, Packing, Holding, and Produce for Human Consumption. There's one that we call the Preventive Control Human Food Rule, and that is current good manufacturing practices, hazard analysis, and risk-based prevention controls for human food. And for feed, another one that impacts many of the farm community, current good manufacturing practices, hazard analysis, risk-based preventive controls for animal feed. And we tend to call that one preventive controls for feed programs. So there's just a lot of moving parts in all of this without any question at all. So why was the law necessary? Well, there's a number of reasons of why that's the case. I would pick on the fact of there were several things that ended up on the front page of the newspapers as the biggest reason that Congress finally acted. It seemed like 2005 and 6 were sentinel years of where things happened and ultimately ended up with the need for Congress to decide how it was going to proceed, the spinach outbreak, melamine, Peanut Corporation of America, and things have been kind of continually drug around in the press since that time as well. We frequently see the CDC. I actually have to get a hold of the CDC. I've been reading the same information as to what's going on in America for at least 10 years, and so I don't think this data is necessarily up to date, but maybe it still is. But the consistent discussion has been about 48 million people get sick and 3,000 people die, and obviously that's not something that we want to be contributed from food. There's seven rules. They're human, animal, produce. Two programs that impact the imports, foreign supplier verification and third-party accreditation. One that's going to creep into your lives in ways that I don't think any of us know yet is the sanitary transportation. It's an issue that allegedly state transportation departments are supposed to be involved in. There are four or five states of where the ag departments and transportation have memorandums of understanding. I think it'll work fine in those states. The rest of them, I'm not so sure, and I would be a little concerned about. And then the intentional adulteration area of where something can end up with DHS, Homeland Security, be as equally involved. This one impacts more dairy than it does produce, but it's an area of concern as well. There's the issuant dates, they're all out. These seven are already in place. There's only a couple of the compliance dates that actually have kicked in at this point. The first compliance date for big farms associated with produce is January 26, 2018. That unfolds all the way through January 26th of 2022. Before the water provisions and there's large farms, small farms, and very small farms, which is not the way I would have named them, but that's the way the law actually treat them. We tried to convince FDA that they should have one rule for farmers and different chapters as to how that would hook together. We failed miserably at being able to do that, so you're stuck with a number of different rules that actually impact the way you're doing things. We also said if the science isn't clear, do an interim standard. They did an interim standard on manure. We think that they needed to do so on agricultural water. I'm going to talk a little more about that in a few minutes. They chose not to. We think that the interim standard, or the standard that they enacted on water, has some serious problems with it. One of the things, and this is, we all have different ways that we approach things. I have, over my many years of being involved with regulations and farming, I would guess the most often repeated thing coming from a farmer is, tell me what to do and I'll do it. Let's just, let's get this over with. Tell me what it takes. Well, in the years that I've been involved in public policy, I don't always support that. And I want to talk just briefly about the reasons for that. We end up with design standards. Those things get in rules, and then they don't change. So don't have the opportunity to find a different way to do things in the manner that I prefer. And we also don't have the opportunity for technology to help us solve things without changing the rules. I think that's part of what was going on with the amount of detail that they did in the agricultural water standards, and I wish they actually had not done that. But they did. We're going to try to figure out some ways in which we no longer actually have that as the sole means by which you should comply. It's a very costly process that they have foisted onto you. So what farms are regulated is also an important part of all of this. And it actually depends on a lot of things that you and I don't think about as farms. Their definition of farm and mine isn't the same. So you need to be aware that is a part of things. There are a number of exemptions, mainly depending on where you sell or how big of an operation you are. If you're under $25,000 on a three-year rolling average, you're exempt entirely from the rule. If you're under $500,000 and don't sell things out of state or more than 275 miles away, you have an exemption known as a Tester Amendment as well. But there's just a lot of things that just don't quite make sense. One of the things that doesn't make any sense to me is if you want the definition of farm, you have to look in the produce, or not in the produce safety rule, but in the human food rule. So I think logically that would be the last place I would look. But that's where it is, and that's what it governs you. And it's a way that they did it to be able to say what was in the rule and what was not in the human food rule. There's a logic associated with it. It's just not a farmer's logic. There's also a number of things on ownership that are also an important part of the way that FDA looks at the regulation as well. The purpose of, well, they got involved in ownership because they feel that the way that a different law that was required for people to register actually required them to separate out farm differently. And as a result, if it depends on, they're saying it depends on if you don't, if it's a farm that farmer that owns a packing house, for example, that's part of a farm. But if you set up a corporation separate from the farm, and that is even the same size, same type of an operation, because of ownership, that's regulated as a facility. Probably in some ways doesn't seem like it makes a difference, except the cost that we're getting for estimates of a food safety plan, which is required for the one if you're a facility, is $10,000 to $25,000. If it's owned by a farm, you don't have that cost. If we're dealing with risk, I can see that we want to make things work. But I can't see how you set up a corporation that had nothing to do with FSMA in the first place really relates to this being a best practice as a way to actually deal with figuring out the way in which to regulate. Anything that's done as manufacturing, so if you wash most all of the produce, and covered produce is important, it's generally consumed raw, so if you wash things or you dice them, you're a manufacturer, and now you're a facility, and now you're in the human food rule, no longer just a farm. They call them mixed type facilities. When this first came out, I used to ask how many people in the room were mixed type facilities. I had one guy raise his hand, say he was. I said, "You're the first person that's ever raised your hand. How did you know about this?" He said, "I heard you talk 2 weeks ago." So it's not something that we generally talk about in any way, shape, or form, but it is certainly something that we need to recognize, is that there's some definitions that don't completely make sense. There's a primary production farm and a secondary activities. The secondary activities are the packing and holding areas. So there's just a whole lot of detail, and I'm staying on this point because of the fact that it's going to be one of those things that you're going to have to figure out where you fit and what is actually required of you from that standpoint. I mentioned covered crops. The way the law is written, the only ones that are regulated are those that are generally consumed raw. There's a non-exhaustive list. In other words, they could slip another one, something in on you, but there's a non-exhaustive list that's found within the, and I put the link into it. And by the way, this presentation will be available to anyone who wants it. So I talked a little bit about the exemptions as well. There's ways in which some farms are not going to be covered. The idea that you would go to an education program regardless is pretty sacred. That is safeguarded. It doesn't matter whether you're ultimately not going to be covered or not. I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about this domestic and foreign producers issues. Our members have been more concerned about this. Some of the folks that were on the Hill at the time that the law was passed in 2010 also were very clear that if we don't figure out the ways in which we treat imported food the same as domestically produced food, we weren't actually doing ourselves a favor. It's a tall order for FDA, but we're not going to let them off the hook. It isn't always the first question somebody asks, but by the time the third question is asked, somebody has said, "So how are they going to regulate that foreign food?" And they have some ideas, and they have some fairly significant budget to do so, but don't let us or them off that hook. This pure and simply is the only way that this is going to work. The margins for you all to make money off of produce is not a whole lot in the first place. So if we're going to cut that, we're basically putting you at a huge disadvantage. So the need is there for this to be something that is done. And when we talk a little bit more about water in a minute, you'll understand why I'm kind of just obsessed about the water issue, because I don't think that it's going to be possible for FDA to assure the foreign producers are doing it. The way things are stacking up, states will do most all of the work on domestic. The feds will do the work on the imported foods. There's a lot of things on technical assistance and training that are really important. Resources for the states. There's been an interesting thing that's happened in that Congress has passed all kinds of laws as unfunded mandates over the years. The appeal or the ability to do that now is just about zero. The recession impacted it. Obamacare, frankly, has impacted that. The view of what resources people actually have has impacted that. If Congress can pass the law, they can fund it. If they don't find the funding for it, I think the states will hand the program back to the feds. Now, we don't want to actually do that, and we'll talk a little bit about the need for us as a buffer in just a minute. But it's really quite an interesting area. Do you know about guidance documents? Is this something that you've ever heard of? Somebody talk about? So you hear about rules, you don't know about laws. Well, the only federal agency that has guidance documents in addition is FDA. The positive side of that is there is some ways to work with this issue of technology that I mentioned, that you can find different ways to do things. The disadvantage is that there's another document that's going to regulate you, and those things go on for, this is going to be a huge document. So I mention it because of the fact that it's an important area for us to all recognize. We work a lot with the Produce Safety Alliance at Cornell, trying to make sure that we stay ahead of all of the kinds of information that should ultimately end up in educational areas as well. So water policy. Thankfully, FDA does recognize the difference between surface and groundwater, less restrictions on groundwater than on surface water. But as we have been working with them, they asked us over this last year to give them examples of scenarios where water is used. And almost everyone we give them, it's like, oh, we didn't know that existed. So the complexity of how water gets to a crop is things that are kind of blowing their mind. And they should have known all of that information, in my view, before they wrote the rule. And if they would have, they probably, I think, would not have written it quite the way that they actually did. So, and the other part of it is that they take, when I look at what I've done in the years that I was with the Wisconsin Department of Ag and some of the other things that I've done in my lifetime, we looked at what is it we're trying to accomplish. And we didn't always assume that everybody that we were regulating was out of compliance. The feds do. They look at it and say, you have to prove your water's clean. Not that if you have clean water, you're less regulated. And that means that if you've got clean water, you're paying the same amount to prove that it's still clean as someone who needs to actually have a program in place to deal with the water issues. That is an inherent difficulty for us, to end up dealing with. And it's an area that we keep talking to them about, of how we can do better than what we actually have at this point. For example, we've been on two decades, right? We've been doing this stuff and still FSMA isn't really implemented. You guys know a lot about your water sources already, but it doesn't take into consideration what you already know. If you haven't been testing your water, that's a little bit more problematic. We all recognize that figuring out and characterizing your water source makes sense. But because of the fact that that's not the way that it's written, they're requiring water frequency testing on surface water at the same level, regardless of what your sources are. There's also some things about compositing water samples that we think would work. I've been on several farms of where it may go on canals all over the place, but it's all from the same water source. So taking four or five composite samples and looking at it it seems to me like a cheaper and better way to do it than the manner of saying that they're all separate water sources. So there's some problems in those particular areas as well. And one of the things that frustrates me as well is that they've selected a water test method that, for the most part, the environmental labs don't use. You have to have the water to the lab within 24 hours. That's not always going to be easy or possible. And most of the places that you currently would be doing work with won't be able to run it according to this method. Now, that doesn't mean they can't change and all of that, but that isn't necessary. There's at least two or three other methods that are equally capable of finding the same results, and we're pushing them on that area as well. No, I have to tell you, this is already a rule. So FDA can just basically say, go to hell, and there's not much we can do about it. We're not willing to give up because we think they did it wrong, and we're going to keep pushing until we find a solution that actually works better for all of us. And frankly, none of us have a different goal in mind. We all expect the water to be adequately clean to make sure the food is safe. So this isn't about the policy, or it isn't about the goal being wrong. It's about the methods of being able to figure out the best ways to achieve it. So I'm going to go through a bunch of questions just to kind of tick off some of the things that you all will be bombarded with as we go along on implementation of FSMA. There's a definition of major interest that has to do with this packing shed issue. And so there's, what does a major interest mean? Is that 51%? Is it 30%? Not defined. We don't know what that actually means at this point. We've kind of touched on this on off-farm packing houses being regulated. Even if you're handled under a different rule, we ought to be doing the same kind of inspections regardless. Mentioned the idea of guidance, the issue of will grade A milk be regulated differently as a result of FSMA, and we don't completely know the answer at this point as well. And whenever people going to be trained to be able to do inspections, and what kind of inspection authority are they going to have? Will initial farm visits be educational and informational rather than enforcement? The answer from the state perspective is we think that should definitely be the case, but we need to make sure that FDA feels the same way about it. I've heard more, and you guys have been really effective at getting audit fatigue as something that's recognized as a topic of concern and interest. On the Hill, I hear this, I get asked more about what are you guys doing about audit fatigue? Well, audit fatigue is what happened over the last 20 years. FSMA hasn't even got into place, so we're in a messy place right now. I don't think anybody knows the answer to exactly how that's going to work and whether audits and where they play. If somebody's been being audited, I think we ought to see that information, and I would guess their risk profile goes down because of actually having a program that actually looks at food safety already. But we have to get some kind of level of agreement on that particular area as well. So why did we get involved? What's the reasons that the NASDA is actually involved and I'm standing up here today? The clearest thing about 5 years ago that I kept hearing is that we need to have a buffer between us and FDA. The only reason FDA was on a farm under the old policy was because you were implicated as being a likely source of a foodborne illness. And their inspectors were there to prove that you caused it. You don't like that. You shouldn't like it. You don't have to like it. So a good reason for, I think state regulators are regulators too, but I think the regulators that you know from back home are a little bit more acceptable to you to be on the farm than to have a federal source being the ones that are actually coming on the farm. So that's, I think, one of the largest reasons that we actually got involved, and probably will remain one of the most significant as well. We really have been active in talking about this idea of educate before you regulate. It's clearly that if we want to move to prevention and we're going to not tell you what prevention means, we aren't helping anybody to comply, and we're not going to do it that way. So there's an important element associated with that. We definitely saw in looking at the rules as they were being written that FDA clearly knows and understands food safety practices. They didn't necessarily show that they understood agricultural production very well. And we think we can help to bring that dimension as well to the reasons and how we look at finding solutions to actually be able to figure out ways in which to do prevention. Education has got to be something that we actually work on, and I'll just repeat again that we've got to make sure that people, that 4 out of 4 people still get to eat. The impact on the industry, we're not as so sure that FDA has recognized all of the costs that it's going to actually be. Certainly, there's an economic impact of having to train all the folks. The record keeping is not necessarily completely over the top, but it is going to take an effort, and it's going to cost some time and effort to actually do those things. The one that I don't think has been touched on at all is this area of, I wonder how many farmers are going to say, you know, I don't necessarily feel comfortable that I understand where this is all going right now. And as a result of that, I'm not going to grow covered crops for the next couple of years. I can grow other crops. And the change in what's the availability of fruits and vegetables, I don't think we've measured yet. Probably less so with fruit, especially those that come off of a tree. But it's going to be an area that I think that we haven't completely understood the impact, and that's a fairly significant one and may shift some things in the nutrition area that weren't anticipated. So where are we now? All the rules are, frankly, issued. Training is available. Sprouts is also included in the produce regulation, so I just listed it. Guidance is under development. We've seen some rough drafts of some things. We're asking them to rewrite them because we think they're more written like a scientific paper than they are like an educational document. Compliance dates are coming. Quite a bit of resources are actually available, and I want to just touch on some of those things as well. Compliance dates are between a year from now and out to 2022 on produce. Human food is already kicked in for the big people. It started in September of 2016. There's smaller scale operations that go all the way 18, 19, and 20 before all of those are in place. Produce Safety Alliance has a great website and lists all of the places where they're doing training and is a resource page that I would encourage you to know about. There's a whole bunch of things on the Food Safety Preventive Controls Alliance. Hopefully you don't have to do that because you're defined as a farm and you're not actually involved in having to deal with the preventive control human food element to things. Sprouts has got their own whole web page associated with it and a completely separate educational program that goes with it as well. One of the things that at FDA has been funded to do and has been broadening its scope on, and that is their technical assistance network, which they call the TAN. The GAO did an audit of the quality of the work that they've been doing under it, and it's taking a long time to get answers back out of it. It's something that hopefully they'll get better at, but the idea that you can submit and get an answer is a fairly useful thing if we can get it to actually be operational. It's been taking, 22 days was one of the things that was said about it, but some of those, we're finding that they're sending out and asking more clarification. So you really didn't get the answer anyway. So you got waiting another 22 days after that. So there's some time that is going by before we actually see this operational. It's as important for us. It's taking just as long for us to get answers from them as it is for farmers. So it's an area where we think some things need to improve. A measured guidance, I only have this on here because I would suggest that you Google FDA FSMA guidance, and there's a long list of the things that they've already implemented and will continue to be an area where they've actually they're easy to find once they've actually been published. So FSMA is a pretty significant change in policy. Prevention's a good idea. We don't want people to be continue to be put out of business. The roles that we all need to play need to shift, and we're not there yet. There needs to be a more cooperative way of looking at what best practices are and sharing them and figuring out the ways in which we make those things actually work. Food safety actually gives some market stability, so it's a good idea, and we can make those kinds of things actually be helpful to all of us. So we're doing a number of things. FDA gave us a cooperative agreement to help them to implement the produce safety rule. We just recently also added the feed rule to that requirement as well. Most of the relationship in the past between states and FDA has been on manufactured food, and about 30 of those states have manufactured food programs in the health department. About 20 have them in the ag department. I'm going to talk a little bit in a minute about the fact of what's happened with the produce rule, but there's a lot more state ag departments interested in it from that standpoint. Almost every article you see written about FSMA says this is the biggest change in food policy in 70 years, but it almost never says it's probably the largest change in agricultural policy in at least the last 40 years. And in the 70s, there was a lot of changes on air, water, pesticides, waste, all of that kind of thing. But this is a major shift in the way that we do business. And it's something that we kind of talk about is it's coming and it's going to be systematic and everything. I think it's going to be a shock to a lot of people. And you're going to probably come back and say, why didn't you tell me about this? And we're trying to tell you about it, but I think it's going to actually be a bigger deal than what we actually thought was the case. This idea that the states would be involved. Post 9/11, there's been a lot of changes in the way that the federal government interacts with the states, and one of those is that the lower forms of government ought to do the work first, and if they are being overpowered, then you go up to the federal government to actually do them. Some of that is an important part of the way that we're actually looking at, I think, the development of policies at the state level as well. So I got told about 4 years ago to figure out a way to have the state people involved in being a part of explaining to FDA what it was about food safety we're concerned about. So there was about 70, it's about 90 people that I tap now. 23 states have been involved, more than that as we move towards implementation. There's other associations that we've had involved as well. We're told to come up with comments on all 7 rules, of which we did. It's about 250 pages of comments that we submitted to the docket to FDA. A fellow by the name of Joe Reardon, who works for Steve Troxler in North Carolina, and I have been the leaders on this particular part of the effort. What we recognize, and we still haven't really changed much in this regard, you got to get those rules right. We're concerned about ag water. Congress has to fully fund this or we'll give it back to FDA. The implementation of the rules must be logical, and there needs to be parity between the imported and domestic food enforcement programs. This has been a top-tier issue to NASDA since 2011. We've been working with Congress, academia, other agencies, industry, to figure out the ways in which we make this be as systematic and sensible approach as we possibly can. There's just a whole bunch of things, and there's some repeat in a way of some of this, so I'm going to skip a little bit of this. What we started recognizing that we always, almost always on these programs, the federal government says, here's how we want you to do this. We said, we don't want to do it that way this time. So we decided to put forth the effort and write the manual that says how a state would actually go about implementing FSMA. We came up with 11 chapters. It's a 134-page document that we put together dealing with everything from the fact that industry has been doggedly clear with us that they want us to be consistent and uniform between states. That makes perfect sense. Got to have the authority to do it. Financial support needs to hook into the feds. Education, compliance, and enforcement are all linked. Outreach and education are important as well. Work planning is a necessity for us to figure out how to do things. We have more problems because of the authorities at state level and federal level on sharing information. A lot of the stuff can't be shared because it can be FOIA'd by somebody, and therefore the protection doesn't make it work. So there's a number of things that were at work. We also found that because we tend to see these things differently, we think about regulation differently, that we have a chapter on dispute resolution. We're not done writing it yet, frankly. But we think that we need to, before we get mad at one another, that FDA and the states need to have a process by which we'll actually sit down and have a way to figure out the answers. And that if it's something that makes sense from an agricultural perspective, that we make sure that FDA does not think that that's the only way to approach it, is their more regulatory mindset. So we talked Congress into $104.5 million in the FDA's budget last year. $21.8 million has come to the states. There are 42 states that have indicated to FDA that they're willing to participate in developing a program to implement the produce safety rule. Any state that isn't white is involved in that process. There's a bunch of different tiers as to the amount of funding that people get depending on the number of commodities, the number of farms that are involved. So there's a whole bunch of ways that people are in or out. California is in the league by itself. It's so much larger than everybody else. Florida is, and Michigan are the next ones in the tier of that as well. So there's a number of different ways to look at it, and those ones that are either gray or colored are the states that are currently involved with us in trying to figure out a way to implement this. 38 of the 42 states, 38 of them are in Ag Department, 4 in Health. At least 8 states that are not in, 5 of them have talked about joining this next year, so we're probably going to, and all of those are talking about being in agriculture. FDA has tasked us to come up with a consortium, an organization to have dialogue on how to implement all of this. So we are in the process of setting up a governing structure for that, and we will host at least one meeting, maybe more, each year with the states. Ultimately, there'll be more outreach and other people invited as well. The states received funding in August. They should be working on planning and infrastructure development, not outdoing anything yet at this point. Some of it, we're finding a number of the states, even if there's federal money available, need permission from their legislature. So there's a number of things that are going on at the legislative level at this point. And we're trying to work with the states to have a kind of a FSMA type model bill, for lack of a better term, where everything is done in pretty much the same way. So what FSMA didn't talk about was, so how do you get farms involved, or how do you get people from in this early development at the state level to actually understand what's going on as well? And that, so one of the things is that we came up with the idea of an on-farm readiness review. And that is one of where it would be a voluntary program, pre-inspectional and non-regulatory. It's an opportunity for someone to come on the farm, take a look around, and tell you whether you're likely going to pass any future FSMA inspections. It's also going to be an opportunity of where people who are really way ahead of the curve, we can learn more about what are the kinds of things that we might want to have in educational programs to share with others, the best practices. Let's not reinvent wheels in any way. Driven by us, it's something that North Carolina is the originator of the idea, and the fellow Joe Reardon and I have been the major push behind getting funding to actually do this. Michigan, North Carolina, Oregon, and Vermont have been involved with us from the standpoint of the Ag Department. Actually, FDA has been cooperating. Florida, Michigan, New Jersey, and North Carolina have been involved with us in developing the actual tool. Produce Safety Alliance is hooked in because we want the information to get back into the educational programs. And this should be operational within the next year. When it is operational, the states will have been trained to be able to do this on farm. One of the things, when we started doing all of this, we went through the rules and said, so what are the things that somebody could be asked a question about? And we ended up, frankly, this is going to bother you, I think, to no end, with 184 pages. Now, there is quite a bit of white space on them because they're spaced out, but 184 pages of things that you could be looked upon as whether you're in compliance or not. Well, you're not going to take a 184-page document, nor am I, and go on a farm and look at all of that. So this is a resource document that we think could have great value, but there'll be checklists to be able to look at it. The other thing that we found, first farm we went on, there's this whole preoccupation about worker health and hygiene. They didn't have any workers on the farm. So do you need to look at that? No. So how do we help organize things that says, here's the way to look at this, don't even bother to read these pages, or don't do this one, do these. So there's a whole bunch of things. And the other thing is FSMA is a mess of things when you look at it from a farming perspective. So we turned the whole thing around and looked at it the way the farmer farms. It's broken out like what you would do. So we're looking at before you plant, during planting, and post-harvest. So that there are really three times that you might look at something in order to kind of get an idea of where FSMA impacts you, but we're get away from this reading of regulations that, from your standpoint, have got to just, you got eyes have got to glaze over and wonder why in the world you're doing it. So we think, and when we think that that resource manual may end up being a complement to what's going on at the Produce Safety Alliance in a way that we hadn't actually set out in the first place, but we have to do it. This is off topic, but I'm going to just take a second. Guy from New Jersey has been somebody, I used to live in New Jersey. I've known this guy for quite a long time. He's a really great resource person in fruits and vegetables. I asked him, I said, so what? We're standing around with this document and realizing that it was too big. And I said to him, I said, so what is this thing that we have here? What did we just create? Did we really mess up or is this got utility? So he takes this 184 pages, he puts it on top of his head and he said, Bob, this is our brain. And he's right. If we look at this from the standpoint of us having a way to look at what it is that's expected, prevention starts to be something that you guys will figure out on your own. We got to help each other as we get going in that whole thing. And we've produced, I think, the brain for all of us to be able to use, to be able to figure out the paths to go forward. So, like I said earlier, we're going to be fully operational in the latter part of 2018. We'd have done this faster if we'd had more money, but we don't. So we're in the process of doing it. We've done one pilot in one state. We're doing some more in Florida in a couple of weeks. And then I think we're pretty sure that we know what we're doing and we'll start piloting it as a process. I've been talking with Veronica and Christy about the fact that there's some opportunities for us to do some work together in this, and that should start rolling out by sometime later this year, as well as some things that we might have as further conversations with you as well. We will be teaching every state, we'll be taught how to use this. We're not going to leave that to chance as well. There's just a ton of stuff going on, folks. There is quite a bit of help available. Don't be shy about seeking it. Start going to the training programs and that kind of things for sure. We're going to continue to push FDA in ways that we think that makes a huge difference. We've been working with industry groups from stem to stern. That's going to, I think, have to, frankly, increase. We need Congress to understand the importance of funding it. We need the new administration to understand that throwing this out isn't probably the right answer either. So there's a lot of things that will be going on in Washington, D.C., I think without question at this point. I'll just mention 2 weeks, the end of next week, we're kicking off a program with the animal food. So there'll be some similar kinds of actions with us in the animal food arena as well. We got involved in this because your NASDA members think that it's important for an agricultural perspective to be present, associated with what FDA is doing. We're still concerned about water. I'm going to just keep reiterating that particular fact. We think there's some really good opportunities for us to continue to work well with FDA in making sure that they understand more about farming. I just would say we believe you guys are a noble profession and we need to make sure that you're supported. We got a little bit of time, Chrissy, for some questions. That's been a lot of stuff. I almost want to apologize for the amount of things that we just went through. And the copies of this stuff will be available. I will, frankly, if you need want to talk about any of these when you get home, please feel free to touch base, because this thing is massive. I went through in the 70s. I helped implement both from an extension. I was wearing that hat at that time. The pesticide education programs. This thing is so much bigger than that it's an amazingly bureaucratic process, and it's getting foisted on you. I think we all knew we had one of the safest food supplies, if not the safest, when Congress changed the rules, and it seems like it's a lot more regulatory than it needs to be. We'd like to help that be useful to you, although I think you're going to find the regulations beyond that you assumed was necessary. Yes? Question is, on the penalty side, is there any definitions of things? There are some things in the law, and I don't remember them off the top of my head. Definitely that needs to be a part of what gets spelled out. Each state that takes this on will probably work with FDA's authority to begin with and use the federal law. The states get some role in that, so as things get discussed at the state level, that is an important issue to pay attention to as well, and certainly is something that we will have produced. And I think part of the PCA, Cornell's, has some information that they've pulled out of it to spell out what those things are in their training program. Sure. Question is on imports, and this is an area where if we don't do that with parity, we screwed up. Yes, there are programs of where it is supposed to operate. There's a third party accreditation program that's supposed to help FDA in making sure that people are doing the right things. I'll just go back to my water issue, and I'm not picking on the country of Vietnam and what I'm about to say, but I would really like to know how they're going to prove that a farmer in Vietnam is doing the same water testing as you are. And unless we're able to do that, we fail. So there's a lot of attention. There isn't a single one of our meetings with FDA that our members don't point the finger back at FDA and say, now just remember, this thing has to be something that you show and prove to us. And actually, we're having we have two meetings a year. One of them is in the first week of February this year. And Steve Osteroff is the guy who's the deputy commissioner at FDA, and we've asked him to outline their entire program on imports, because we don't feel like we know enough about exactly how they're going to do it. They got $25.4 million and have asked for about the same amount more of dollars to implement the program, but we're not comfortable that we know for sure that this is going to be something that looks pretty similar. It's a very important issue. Yeah. No, they're food safety. The question is, of 3,000 deaths, how many of those are linked to farms? I don't know how many are, but the 3,000 deaths are from food safety, which include manufactured food as well. So it's not just produce by a long shot. And like I said, I don't think I'd like to see those numbers updated. I'd like to know how we're doing now. Yes?
Yeah, I'm a processed berry farmer, and I guess for that operation, are we with FSMA going to be required, or is the end going to be third-party audit, Global Gap, or Primus, or are we going to be able to avoid that?
So, and you're a dairy, you said?
Yeah. Process Berry.
Berry, sorry. This is one of the thorniest issues that I'm spending a tremendous amount of time on right now. There's no provision in FSMA to authorize third-party audits in domestic production. There is a third-party accreditation associated with foreign products, but there is no requirement in FSMA that you actually have an audit performed, and it is conceivable that it is an alternative. What we're probably spending most of our time talking about is if somebody has done the audits, that they maybe know more or some more things about what's going on and they should get some credit for that. That credit would simply be that they're maybe inspected less frequently. But if we inspected your facility and found everything in ship shape, you would drop to the same lower level of risk. So there's not going to be a requirement. It would take a change in the law in order to require that or to authorize that. We are hearing from almost every single operation, or FDA is, saying, so where do I fit and what credit, you know, what? We did a lot of work to get to where we are. Why don't we get some credit for it? FSMA is pretty non-committal about that. It was discussed on the Hill, and the choice by Congress was made to not actually to spell out how they might be used. Yeah?
What would you say are the three top concerns for food safety?
Three top concerns for food safety. That's a question I frequently ask people that I work for, work for me, so it's turnaround is, I think, fair play. Here, this isn't quite the answer that you probably anticipated, but frankly, I'm probably a little bit still hooked in on this third-party validation issue as well. There was a lot of people within FDA and USDA when the rule, or when the law got passed, saying, I wanted to give you the comfort level that if you're GAP certified, you're most of the way there. And yet, almost every one of the farms that has been the source of a foodborne illness since 2005 was a GAP certified or one of the other audit programs certified. As a result, you maybe aren't quite most of the way there. So one of the issues that I feel pretty strongly about is that you need to go into this with an open mind of recognizing that there's a pretty significant set of regulations getting lumped on you. And that's probably the most important thing to recognize. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with those programs. What I am recognizing is that Congress set up a parallel or a similar track, and we have to actually deal with that issue. I think education is also a most significant thing that needs to happen. And if you're not getting the education out of the programs that come to you, I'd love to hear about it, what you thought was missing. So that going to education programs is also probably one of the most significant things that you can actually do. And I think contact with the ag departments. Let them know what your concerns are and how you're actually looking at doing it. There's the 42 states that we know are going to be involved. Most of the ones that are the larger states are in ag departments, and I think those contacts are probably the most important things as well. Hold us to this prevention idea. This can work, but it's going to take people actually understanding that. Prevention means something 2 years from now and 5 years from now and 7 years from now, not just a one-time blush. Yeah.
So is this coming down on just the barns or processors?
Everything. And the question is who's impacted by this? Produce rule governs the production on a farm. The way that the definitions are written is a farm gets exempted from some facility requirements, but the facility is regulated under the human food.
So
If you're a facility, that's changing now, depending on the size of the operation. Yes. Question is there any way that a farmer can be held not liable if there's something contaminated but it didn't come from the farm? This is a topic, there's a series of things, that being one of them, that we're hoping will be talked about in the farm bill. I think some loan guarantees, I think some work on what does a change in a packing house look like under FSMA that would make you less regulated. There's four or five things that we could look at. It currently does not exist as any kind of safe harbor for you. The likelihood of this being something that needs important attention, we may have seen some changes in Washington that makes that more palatable, and therefore this might be a good time to have that dialogue. I think before they were always kind of the belief, well, let the liability laws sort that out, which is not an unacceptable answer. Right. That's absolutely right. His comment was, if you could exempt us, that would drive the desire for compliance higher. There is no question about that. You're absolutely, completely correct on that. We're with you. I don't know if Congress will be, but we're with you.
Thank you guys very much for attending. Well, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Good. Good. Good to see you. Yeah. Yep. Not until morning. No dark 100 this morning. Yeah, I'm glad you came. Appreciate it. Good to see you here. Hi. Christy will have him for sure. You can send me an email and I'll send them to you if you want to do it that way as well.